You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to welcome back to Morning Edition. I'm Audie Cornish.
That's that groove, man, has been in my head. I haven't been able to get that out of my head for 30 years. It's so, God, it's clean.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly. For your business paper needs, or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and co-founder of the Committee to Plan Parties, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin Janes, your office administrator.
And with us as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Michael, do you remember you specifically told me to only bring one sheet of paper? You said it only takes one sheet to make a difference. And I said, are you sure, Michael? And you said, Pam, Pam, Pam. And then you sneezed in my tea. And then you said, don't worry, it's just allergies. Do you remember that?
I don't.
Oh, look out, world. Because old Pammy is getting what she wants. And don't call her Pammy. Because today's episode is about Pamela Morgan Beasley, a.k.a. the Bart Simpson of Scranton, Big Pregs, Pamalama Ding Dong, Spamster, Pamburger with cheese, and fries, and shake. Those are all the ones I had written.
What is Spamster?
Michael says it to Pam, and she says, Pam plus Spam, and he goes, plus Spamster, plus Hamster. Okay. She's like trying to break it down.
Right? Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. A.K.A., what does he call after he's watching Devil Wears Prada?
Makushla.
Makushla, yeah, whatever he
calls it. Yeah, yeah, from Million Dollar Baby.
He's going to kill
me. He's going to try and kill me.
Anyway.
So, this week, we're talking about Pam. Pam is one of the main characters of the show. She appears in every episode. Her personal journey spans the entire course of the show. Her voiceover wraps up the finale. Pam is a character that we've been kind of waiting to dig into, waiting to kind of focus on, and I think it's one that we haven't talked about enough. I think one of the things that happens with Pam is she gets talked about as like the other half in her relationship with Jim, or as is a side part of the Michael Scott Paper Company arc, or as almost an accessory to other characters and other relationships. So I think we're going to take this time to look into what Pam's character is and what it means to the show.
Pam, of course, played by Jenna Fischer. I was just listening to a great podcast with Jenna Fischer. She was on Off Camera with Sam Jones, and it was a really great interview. So go and listen to it if you got the time. But
is that the black and white?
They do videos on YouTube too. Yeah. But there's so many weird parallels to her life. Jenna's with Pam's. She broke off an engagement to move to LA to become an actor. In that interview, she talks about all these different things. She's talking about how she's got this book about how to help young actors make it in Los Angeles, and you know, talking about how she never skipped a step in becoming famous. So she worked as an extra on Pleasantville and all these other, you know, that she was always climbing, never really made a big break.
Do you know what the book is called? Is it Somehow We Manage?
She tells this great story about how she broke into some party and met Molly Shannon, and Molly Shannon told her to never give up, and that's always kept her going. What was really great about listening to this podcast is just how relatable Jenna Fischer is as a person. It made me realize just how much how relatable Pam is, really. I just one more thing too. I thought it was interesting. There's a movie that she wrote and directed a long time ago when she was on The Office, I'm pretty sure, called Lolly Love, that she made with James Gunn, who
James Gunn writes
and directs the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that's just a brief.
You know, she was married to a man named Jim for a while, or a man named James.
That was James Gunn, I'm pretty sure.
I don't think they were married.
Yeah, yeah. 2000 to 2008. Yeah.
Okay. You were just gonna not mention that until I mentioned it.
You know.
So she was married to a man named Jim.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For
mm-hmm.
8 years.
A Jim. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And she was. I mean, she was also pregnant when she was pregnant in the show. Another with her character and her.
My goodness.
That's crazy. I did not realize that was. I know in an interview she talked about, I have my Jim. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't realize it was James Gunn because he became famous so much later.
Right, right. Yeah.
I had no idea that she moved, that she like broke off an engagement and moved to L.A. Do you know where from?
I know she's from St. Louis.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's okay.
There's a blooper where she and Aaron are having a talk. Ellie Kemper, mm-hmm. they're having a talking head together and they start over. And I think Jenna Fischer says, look at us, two girls from St. Louis or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's important just to note that because I think that Jenna Fischer does such an amazing job of bringing that part of herself into mm-hmm. the character of Pam. She speaks a lot about how her chemistry with John Krasinski is undeniable as well.
Well, and you mentioned her relatability. I think the nuance she sort of like brings to Pam is these small little moments. It's the moments where she's sort of introspective, where she's looking off camera, where she has these. So much of the work she has to do, especially with Jim, is nonverbal. Like, there's so much of their chemistry and their relationship and a lot of how she interacts with people in the office. It's all these glances. It's all of these sighs, these little moments. And so she has to act with so much relatable nuance, especially given the fact that, you know, her and Jim are sort of these quote unquote sane characters amidst all this madness that you have to relate to the both of them.
Yeah. It occurred to me also while just kind of listening to this and thinking about Pam and like, just like speaking to her being relatable. I feel like watching it again, from her perspective, I relate to Pam the most. Maybe it kind of occurred to me that like Jim is like a little too smart and cunning really for you to see yourself in him. Right. Pam always just kind of
too tall, too handsome.
Yeah.
Got those boyish good looks.
At least in the early seasons, Pam is always like kind of taking it. And I think we see ourselves a little bit in that character.
I think, you know, we talk about Jim a lot and we haven't done a real episode on Jim. And we will, certainly. We've been waiting to do it. But in a lot of ways, Jim is played as an audience surrogate. He's a straight man. He's looking directly into the camera, making a facial expression to kind of communicate to the audience like what you're supposed to kind of be feeling in this moment, to realize how silly or inappropriate or funny like a certain scenario is. But I think in another way, like Jim also in this office environment, it starts out as very dour and it's very mundane, right? Mm-hmm. Like on purpose, Jim is kind of the force that is striving for something better and is eventually looking to kind of improve himself. And it's professionally mm-hmm. for Jim. It's all about success and kind of climbing the ladder, right? Mm-hmm. And when you flip that to Pam is actually very, very, very similar in the looks that she gives to the camera. Not nearly as many as Jim per se, mm-hmm. but almost emotionally she's trying to build a different life for herself, right? She's stuck in this engagement that she's not really committed to. And, you know, later on in the show, she's stuck in this job that she's not committed to, right? And eventually she's striving for another life, a better life as well. But that better life isn't necessarily another company in Philadelphia or a job in corporate or a management or senior position or anything. It's finding the person that she loves and starting a family and finding a life that they're comfortable with together, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the show, when Jim and Pam really chafe and what they want from life really kind of becomes a conflict, right? I think that's what we see, that sort of divergence between their ambitions for a better life. And I think in a lot of ways, Pam is the emotional heart of the show. Pam, you know, you talk about relatability, and I think that's a big piece of it. But like there's so much where Pam not only just is relatable in what she's going through, but also the emotional intelligence that she shows to other characters. She's one of the only emotionally intelligent characters on the show. Hmm. And Jim, I think, displays a little of that, but Pam is the one who actually makes good on it. Pam,
yeah.
We'll talk about this, but Pam is the one who's outwardly kind to other characters, even if a lot of times it gets thrown right back in her face.
Right, right.
You know, so she has to kind of learn to assert herself. And again, like the whole show is Pam trying to be better, or looking to be better, even when she doesn't know it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That's funny that you bring up, like, you know, comparing her emotional intelligence to Jim's. I think, like, a direct reflection of that is Survivor Man. We see Jim decide that he's going to group everyone's birthdays together. And Pam knows it's not going to work because she is thinking about people. And Jim is kind of just thinking about how to get through the day or something like that and isn't actually worried about how people feel.
I was thinking the moment where they're both in the car with Aaron.
That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah, and then Jim's just like, I just had to not be in there.
That is just blatant.
Because that doesn't interest me at all.
Yeah, like that's sort of the two of them. Also, one of my favorite Jim and Pam moments is when they're both like, there's these great moments when they kind of team up and they're on the same page, but also still trying to. They know that one of them has to be the good person, like in Dinner Party, where Pam brilliantly reels Jim back into the party. It's like, well, you can always get new stuff, but you can't get a new party, you know, and brings him back into it. And she's just like, no, you're not leaving me here. Like we're doing this together. She's very, very good at doing those moments, kind of in front of everyone's noses sometimes too.
Mm-hmm. There's another moment for Jim, and this is not an episode about Jim, but where I think it's Andy and Gabe, and Gabe confronts Andy in the bathroom. About like not dating Aaron or not going after Aaron again. And Jim happens to be in there and he follows them out. Yeah. And like the camera clearly goes to Jim to ask him what he thinks. And he goes, you guys are following people in the bathroom now?
Yeah.
Like that's what he says. Yeah. It's just kind of a dismissal. But let's get back to Pam.
Pam, season one, dating Roy. Jim is in love with her.
He sounds like inside the actor's studio.
May I talk to Roy?
Hey, Roy here.
Pam's an interesting character in this season. She's kind of, again, you know, obviously she's this audience surrogate. We see a lot of her one-on-one with Michael.
First person to get fake fired.
Fake fired. She gets mistreated a lot in this very short season. A moment that comes to mind is when Kevin in Hot Girl asks if Pam is worried about Amy Adams being in the office, and he's like, well, she's hotter than you. And Pam stands up for herself in that moment and says, that's a very rude thing to say, Kevin. But otherwise, she kind of, you know, keeps her head down, stays quiet a lot in this season. She seems oblivious maybe to Jim being in love with her, and even though Roy, we don't like Roy as an audience, she seems to be really into it.
I think Pam is very much like a kinder character who's very much she's very meek in this season because of the fact that she's the receptionist. Michael is such a domineering presence and often is asking her to do crazy things. Like, just in general, Pam enters the show as someone who's very shy, but like also has these little flashes, right? So much of the early show is people with flashes. Jim having these flashes of interest and of humor and things like that. And with Pam, it's all about like her, how funny she is and how she can like really surprise these different characters and stuff. And I think that comes to bear later on in the show, as Pam always kind of knows what Michael's doing. And she can kind of read where Michael's going, and like she knows what Michael's thinking. So Pam, I mean, you can call it emotional intelligence if you want, but just like this idea to kind of this idea that Pam is more aware than she lets on, or that Pam is seeing more than you maybe expect, I think kind of happens early in the season. I think if we're talking broad strokes about who Pam is in the show, like I think we can talk like in chunks, right? So maybe we don't need to go season by season, but like season one, season two, like Pam is very much in that role. I'm thinking really specifically of a moment in the injury when Pam doesn't want to go pick up Michael when Michael's hurt.
Yeah.
And when Michael finally does get to the office, he says to Pam, you know, oh, so were there any messages? And she says, no, there weren't any messages. And he says, well, it seems so important that you be here. And she says, well, that's my job. And he goes, your job is being my friend, Pam.
Like, Yeah, I mean, she's a babysitter for a lot.
Yeah,
early on. Like, and I think it's funny you mentioned like talking about it in chunks. Like, her role is very. The jobs that she actually holds in the office is very much a reflection of her responsibilities to the other characters, mm-hmm. not just in the workplace, but who she is. Like, she's a receptionist for this first, you know, five seasons or so. And unfortunately, a lot of her job is just shouldering the burdens of like men mostly. Yeah. Like, she's defined by her relationships to all these guys. She babysits Michael's feelings. She takes care of Jim. Mm-hmm. She's like, Kevin is just saying insulting things to her. She's literally just putting everyone's stuff in order, like as a receptionist. Mm-hmm. And then eventually moves on to salesman and even office administrator, where she's like, I'm actually one of the smartest people here. And I know how things should be run. And mm-hmm. that's always been my role here. And now I'm getting paid appropriately for it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did make a note that was like, it seems like, you know, maybe Pam stands up for herself a couple of times. She does get a little bit of pranking in with Dwight in season one during the Alliance. She goes downstairs and makes a phone call while he's locked in a box. But otherwise, it kind of seems like she's really just there to be almost like an object of all these people's desire. Jim, Roy, Michael, even Kevin, even Ryan.
A weird comment from Creed every now and then, I'm sure.
Yeah, uh-huh. And like, you know, episodes like the basketball game, you know, she kind of plays into it a little bit, right? She's sort of like, you know, mm-hmm. like likes fueling the competition between Roy and Jim and things like that.
Jim and Daryl in the ping pong.
Mm-hmm. Later, yes, yeah. But we start to see her come out episode one of season two, The Dundies.
Where she gets drunk and kind of has the, not an outburst, but yeah. She is really loud and more dramatic at the award show. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The inhibitions go away, right?
And she's, the limits of work are gone.
Expresses herself more or whatever. Yeah. And I think just in general, like, we see Pam is so, the other characters really tread all over Pam, right? In so many different ways. Mm-hmm. And we see Pam begin to not just have flashes, but like there's a personality, there's a person there. And I'm thinking specifically of Boys and Girls in season two, where the idea is that Jan comes down and she's looking for, you know, lower level workers in the company who maybe have ambition or promise or potential to be something else. And Pam expresses this interest in graphic design, you know, and she talks about wanting to be an artist and being interested in that. And I think that's the first time we hear about that. Mm-hmm. And the episode ends with Roy telling her that, like, it's not going to happen. Like, he's really saying no. And Pam is talking about having a house with a porch that wraps around, that she just starts crying, you know. Mm-hmm. So Pam, it feels so trapped and very much locked in. I mean, where is the upward trajectory professionally for a receptionist, right? And, you know, emotionally or romantically or in life, like, where are you going if you're going forward with a person that you don't love and that is kind of suppressing you, you know? Like, there's, it seems not hopeless for Pam because Jim is always around, right? But it does, you know, Pam does not have a lot going for her early on, you know?
No, there's a very critical moment too, basically right before, like, when, you know, when Jim comes back from New York and like knocks on the door, and she's basically at that moment, she's like, you know what? I'm fine if Jim never comes back. I've moved on. I've got my own things going on. I'm taking art classes. Like, I'm optimistic about the future, mm-hmm. you know? And that's kind of the first time in those first few seasons that she has this moment of like where she feels like she's at this plateau and she's finally not really either doing what Roy wants her to or trying to, you know, be with Jim or anything. It's just sort of, this is who she is. And we see her dealing with that.
I think, you know, the moment that you're bringing up, I think is a really important one to bring up.
At the end of season three.
Yeah, as we were planning this episode, I was thinking, you know, in terms of what role does Pam play in the show and then what is her personal development in the show?
Yes.
And we're actually kind of doing both as we kind of chart this out right now. And I think in season three, so much of what we see from Pam is, again, self-assertion, becoming more, standing up for herself, speaking up more, right?
Either that quote
where she says, don't call me Pammy, you know, like that, that all happens in season three. And that happens when Jim is dating Karen and she's already broken up with Roy, right? So even though there's this uncomfortable sort of tension with Karen and Jim and she's there, you know?
Yeah.
I think what we get by the course of season three is that Pam becomes her own person. She is independent. She's not tethered to... It's important that Pam is comfortable with who she is and is a strong character without her romantic relationship to do mm-hmm. that for her. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's super, super important.
Yeah.
And the fact that Pam says, I'm okay with who I am, like I'm feeling, you know, I'm optimistic about the future, right? Before Jim comes in and asks her out on the date, like, there's only that brief moment where we really see it, but it is important that we see it, that Pam, you know, Pam's character is not dependent on her romantic relationship. I think that's super important to call out.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, okay, so that's, we see season three end with that really, I think, one of the most exciting moments on the show.
Oh, yeah.
When Jim actually comes in and
maybe even just the moment after Jim coming in. She just turns to the camera and smiles and says, what were we talking about?
Yeah, what was the question?
And it's just like,
yeah. Because you know what sucks is, like, you know, so much of what we talk about Pam is in, like I say, relationship to Jim or relationship to Michael, and it's not about her.
Right.
And I feel like that's another moment where it's like, oh, here's Jim coming in to sort of save this moment. But really it is Jenna Fischer in that moment after that mm-hmm. like delivers all the emotional weight of that moment. It's just awesome. But then after we get into season four, and this begins sort of the business school arc for Pam.
Yeah.
Well, I think... the business school arc.
Sorry.
In season four, Jim and Pam are together, but they're kind of settled. Their romantic dynamic is not at the forefront of the plot of the show.
This is just a nice time for us as
well. They get this is when they actually the office finally, you know, they've suspected it, but
right,
it's official.
It finally happens, and I think we do see
this
a lot
really
of
really good. This is really good. My heart soars with the eagle's nest.
Her name was Pam. She was a receptionist. She sat over there. His name was Jim. He was a salesman. He sat over there. I brought these people together. I'm Cupid. I'm going to shoot you with my sparrow. Yeah.
Funny little bird when he gets the job.
Oh, no,
done.
He has like a love gun, right? And he's like, pow, pow.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, it's season four. We see Pam kind of supporting Michael. I think that's like a big role that she plays, is this emotional support for Michael, right? Mm-hmm. There's that moment where he's like the robot and he's like, oh, we are office drones. All we do is work.
Right.
His work.
Yep.
And she has to come in, like, take the battery out.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And then,
okay.
Yeah. And in Chair Model, for example, Pam is the first person to volunteer to set Michael up with anyone.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, I've got someone for you, Michael. You know, and it's her landlord, right?
Landlady?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So Pam does show, I think, more, you know, connection to Michael, or she's more willing to, like, be kind to Michael than some of the other characters in season four. And then in season five, that's when we do get the art school arc. And then you get Michael Scott Paper mm-hmm. Company. And in the art school arc, we see Pam go to New York and try to become a graphic designer. Eventually, she does encounter some failure and comes back. And then, you know, later on, she does go into she joins the Michael Scott Paper Company.
So, like, what I want to talk about with the art school thing is if Pam goes and comes back, what was the point of the art school arc?
I think just in general, it gives Pam an opportunity to kind of get out of Scranton, an opportunity to spread her wings, an opportunity to explore this passion, right? Someone who's had this sort of deep set passion, as opposed to someone like Jim, who seems to be more poised for success in a managerial role. And same with Dwight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's more inclined for paper industry success.
Mm-hmm.
Pam is pursuing sort of an artistic dream, right? Even though it's a job, it's also a profession. It's also a calling for her in some level, right? So I think it's important on one hand that she gets to explore that. And on the other, she does experience failure here. She does get a setback. And I think it's true to the show a little bit that not everything works out all the time for everyone. And so Pam does encounter this failure. And then she has to kind of make a choice. If she's going to double down and stay in art school or come back to Scranton, where she's at home and where she can be around not just Jim, but her family and like what's comfortable for her. And I think one thing we do see from Pam is that she is pretty comfortable in Scranton, even though she dreams of New York a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Soho is mostly lost, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. but anyway, I think that's why it's, you know, there is something to be there, even if it's failure.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that. It makes her stronger in a little way. In a way, it she learns to let things go. Maybe even to let some dreams go.
Mm-hmm. There's also something that kind of funny that happens where Jim finds out that Pam is failing art school, and all the other characters in the show already know. Like, oh yeah, you just found out that Pam's failing art school, right? And Dwight's like, oh yeah, did you see that painting? That picture she drew up on the wall. They're like, it has two shadows coming from two directions. And they're like, Dwight, like, lay off.
Of there.
And he goes, what? Are there two suns?
Like, yeah.
And the Andromeda galaxy.
Yeah.
Right. the very kind of bluntness that Pam really enjoys about Dwight, and we see later. Mm.
Well, just that, like, I love this idea that the other characters see things about Jim and Pam that we don't.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah.
That, like, when somebody impersonates Jim and everybody laughs, like, I don't know, man, like, maybe, I don't know, man, maybe we can, like, listen to some records, and they all find it funny, like, they all laugh, like, I love that we get a little moment like that. But anyway.
Well, then, of course, after this, she goes right back to being the receptionist in Scranton. She goes right back to being the copier's bitch. and she's getting a little fed up with it. And right about that time is when Michael Scott decides to quit and form his own company.
I think this moment, too, is echoed by her whole art school experience, too, which is like this whole show is very, like, The Office is very traditional. Right? In tons of ways. I mean, it takes place in this just sort of cookie cover random office building in America, right? And a lot of it, like we say,
an American workplace.
An American workplace. And it's like Pam's the emotional heart of the show. The show is about kind of the American dream. I'm getting real heady here, but really it is. It's about these people who are in their work and they're sort of start at this place of like, we are single. And we're going to try and have a family. We're going to get a house. We're going to advance our careers.
What does having it all mean to you? A job and a family.
Right. It's sort of like that's what the show is about. And that means that sort of Pam is at the center of this because she's the driving force behind a lot of this between her and Jim and the whole show in general. And so like they have to like I feel like the whole art school arc is a reflection of that. Like she's got to take a shot at it. She's got to try. Like she's not going to not try, especially on the heels of breaking up with Roy, who clearly was stifling her desires to go to art school. Like she has to do that. That Jim is going to like, is going to support her in that, you know, where Roy probably didn't. And she's like, yeah, that's what I want to do. So we see her at least try it. And the fact that she fails, whether or not she's actually a good artist, whether or not it has to do with how hard the computer programs are and she'd rather just actually draw and paint, who knows? But I think it's really important that we see her struggle. Those phone calls they have, it strengthens their relationship too. And it kind of sends it into all the way through their marriage. It kind of pushes it and gives them the sort of strength that wasn't there before.
Yeah. So what you're saying is Pam is our Jay Gatsby and art school is our Daisy Buchanan and Roy is Tom Buchanan.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so we beat on boats against the current, born ceaselessly into New York.
That's right. Who's Nick? And okay, whatever.
Well, so Michael Scott,
Toby McGuire.
Michael Scott Paper Company.
or Paul Rudd, if you watch the TV version of The Great Gatsby. Anywho,
we're gonna back on track here. The Michael Scott Paper Company, obviously one of our favorite parts of the whole show. I gotta say, Pam is a big part of that. Watching her interact with Michael, she's very comfortable with him now. She's like, she has learned to, you know, just kind of like. I mean, you know, Michael opening the door in his robe and saying, my hooker's here for their first business meeting. You know, Pam's just kind of like put on some clothes, like, let's get going. You know, she just kind of lets that, oh, it's Michael being Michael.
I think there's a moment, you know, where Pam is, when Charles comes in and Charles is really asserting himself and really trying to bring Michael, rein in Michael, of our days and our nights, of our wrongs and our rights. Pam is working on this new copier and she's so, and in the moment she's like, I finished this new copier. I could do a bound book. I could print different colors. I could do collated things. And then there's this moment where she looks like off in the distance. Right.
Right.
And it's almost like if you compare that to the art school arc, it's like that sort of big failure is more fulfilling than this tiny success. Right. Like what's more significant. Right.
Yeah.
So Pam does roll the dice to go with Michael. And she does assert herself to want to become saleswoman and salesman. And then she does have to kind of help Michael get through. Again, supporting other characters, being kind of this voice of reason, this support figure, right?
Yeah.
Be like, all right, Michael, what's one thing we can do today? Because Michael is so overwhelmed. He's got a million things. He's like, I got to do 10,000 things before I get dressed.
You know? Yeah,
she
gets
a lot of practice being a mother with Michael before she actually has to be a mother.
Like,
whether she asked for that or not.
Think about how well prepared she is to raise a teenager.
Oh my gosh.
It's kind of crazy.
Like when she's trying to get him to do any sort of work during pretzel day.
Yeah.
And she has to like keep track of what he's doing, you know?
Yeah. I mentioned this before too, but the moment when she tells Michael, I don't want to be a receptionist anymore. Michael just says, right. He just says the word right in a way that conveys he's not surprised at all. And that this is something you've been able to tell about Pam.
I mean, at this point, he probably has a lot more respect for Pam than he did when we started the show in season one. You know, I think he treats her like, you know, a doormat a little bit. She's always the butt of his jokes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Of course, he does the fake firing, like all these different things. He's always, you know, second, like, doesn't appreciate her and all these things. Mm-hmm. But at this point, he now, I think, has a lot of respect for her. Of course, he goes to her art show and all these other things before that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's a good example of.
And that role for her, like, allows her basically to speak the language of anyone in the office. And you see that displayed time and again throughout the entire show. And she's able, like the scene where she's just trying to get, this is jumping ahead, but when she's trying to get signatures from department heads to be an office administrator.
Season 7.
You see her, all these moments, you know, interacting with the character in a way that make them like her. And they don't notice that what they're signing or whatever. Right. And she's real. So it's just like this moment that kind of encapsulates.
Like, where they show her talking to Meredith and she's just like air humping, like, and Meredith
silently
like
thrusting
it.
Yeah.
It's a really good, be like
another great example of her emotional intelligence.
Exactly. All the time she spent dealing with everyone's bullshit, and she knows how to like deal with everybody.
She knows exactly what they like to hear.
Hugely respect about Pam. I just want to say on its own, she didn't buy Ryan's bullshit from day one. She never lets up, and I love that about Pam. She just never believed him.
That is so true.
There is one time where they're asking about wedding gifts, and Ryan's like, would you rather have $100 now or $10,000 6 weeks from now? And then it ends with Ryan just putting an envelope in his
the
pocket.
The guy has an algorithm to predict.
Oh, that's right.
Every
that's true.
College basketball game. And then she's like, what a
day. Don't tell Jim.
But anyway,
all right, she had one
Michael
last.
Scott,
one
paper company, Pam.
Yes.
So she,
thank you.
She, as a saleswoman, she does kind of gain reps and experience. She's not going to take the phone calls. She's not going to make the copies, because if she does that once, she goes back into being the receptionist. So they do kind of learn to kind of honor her and value her, you know, or to respect her at the very least, right? Mm-hmm. And when eventually they are resorbed into Dunder Mifflin, she comes back as a saleswoman.
I resorbed the fetus.
Mm-hmm. So now I have the strength of a grown man and a tiny baby. So now the sales staff has the strength of receptionist Pam and salesman Pam.
That arc is like, that arc doesn't exist without Pam. Like, it only works because someone stood up and left the office with Michael.
Michael would still be in his robe in his condo making pancakes if it weren't for Pam.
Mm-hmm.
So
French
he would have just
what was he making?
That would have just
French
been
toast.
The end of Michael Scott. Like, I don't know what he might have become, a postman or something after that. You know,
that's a great job for him. It's another episode. Alternative.
He doesn't get to do
Michael
his comedy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. That's true. But,
although he does in little bits. Anyway,
so after the Michael Scott paper company arc, this leads us to Pam and Jim in season 6. And what do we kind of get from Pam and Jim in season 6? We get Pam as a saleswoman, often working in conjunction with Jim to make sales. Mm-hmm. We get their marriage. We get their honeymoon. So they're out of the show for a little while, right? They get the thing where they're trying to come back and they're pitching to Donna as a combined sales team. Pam is a saleswoman. She's 100% part
give,
of the staff.
He takes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
What's wrong with you? Yeah. And she goes, yee.
Yeah. 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 She starts to get let off the hook. Yeah. She's... it's kind of funny.
I just delivered a baby. They didn't give me a guarantee. I don't even know who you are anymore.
It is funny, like, how much the show is a comedy. In the first 5 seasons, there's not a ton of comedy they give to Jenna Fischer, like these moments. And you see in the back half, which I think we're going to get into, the back half of the show, she does a lot more actual comedic lifting and kind of spreads her wings. Like, oh, Jenna Fischer is really good at this, too.
You know, she's very good at setting up people for,
yes,
you know, like
we talked about this in the Daryl
asking
episode.
The right questions.
Yeah.
I think too, she's the only person that, you know, realizes that Donna and Michael might actually have something.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, mm-hmm, including Michael, is willing to kind of like write it off. It's not a big deal. She's not interested at all, right? And, you know, Pam is like, no, you know, I think there's still a chance.
Mm-hmm.
She calls her Little Miss Boob Shirt or something like
that.
Yeah. And right. And she's like, women don't like heart shaped jewelry. And Jim is like, and she goes, oh, no, except for that heart-shaped necklace you gave me.
Which I love.
Yeah. But anyway, that's kind of what we get from Pam in season 6. Not a lot of outright development, but Pam is who she is as a character on the show. And then in season 7, we do get a little bit more. I'm sorry if I'm moving too fast. You
no,
can
no,
stop
no,
me.
No, not at all.
But in season 7, we do get more of Pam asserting herself and more of Pam becoming a different version of herself. I think you know, you talked about counseling, episode 2 of season 7, where Pam kind of realizes, she says, man, like, you know, she's like, I'm not good at sales, but it's not really fair because you're paid on commission. So if you're not good at sales, you don't make any money. She goes, I guess that's fair. So she kind of engineers the scenario where she kind of talks herself into becoming the office administrator, which some people don't really like the way that she does this. But she does kind of figure out a way to get corporate to sign off. And she does have to go around and get signatures from all the department heads. She plays off the fact that this happened before they were bought by Sabre, right? She talks Oscar into her salary, right?
Gabe is the perfect corporate straw man to just not get in the way. She's like, the look in her eyes when she's like, no, I want you to say it. Yeah. Say that I lied.
He says, I've been through all the books, you know, and I can't find anything that says that you're the office administrator. But he doesn't want to come out and accuse her, you know. So, yes, she does become office administrator, right? And then later in that season, she has to go kind of head-to-head with Dwight, the building owner, right? And there's a moment, I think, that's super important where she and Jim are in the stairwell, and she's trying to, you know, bluff Dwight into getting rid of all the terrible things that he's been doing. The big roach banner, the motion lights, the single-ply toilet paper in the bathroom. He's like, don't get me started on how coddled the modern anus is. She goes to meet Dwight in his, like, lair. Nate is there, like, unplying the toilet paper, right?
Reply it.
I don't think it goes that way. Reply it. But anyway, Pam is in the stairwell. She's talking to Jim, and she says, you know, like, I don't know if I can fail again. She says, I failed at art school. I failed at sales. Like, I don't want to fail again. I think that's a really incredible moment of honesty from Pam, you know? And, you know, Pam is someone who's trying to be better and trying to find these things that she can be successful at, right? And it is, it's really sad, but it's also, there's this, it makes the show more interesting and more compelling that there are these obstacles, these hurdles in her way. And what we get is Dwight overhearing from the stairwell and then, like, leaving the book of code on her desk or something
that.
So Pam does become the office administrator, and then later on in the show, she does kind of continue to provide that emotional support to different characters. She helps Aaron decide to break up with Gabe, right? So she, you know, she helps Dwight and Angela, and this is kind of to backtrack, but, like, through their separation, right? You know, Pam is helping out Angela. You know, Angela says, I'm having relationship troubles, and since you're always having relationship troubles, I thought you might be someone I could help out.
Yeah.
So and then when they go on when they go to visit Dwight's beet farm in season 4,
right?
Pam, you know, kind of looks out for Dwight. She writes the nice review on TripAdvisor. She's like, we had a really nice time.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And in the midst of that, had a baby, you know, as well. Yeah.
I just delivered a baby.
Right. And sort of like the way, I mean, we see her go through the pregnancy. She brings the kid into the office. This obviously happens twice, once they have Philip in season 9, not 8, right? 9?
Sure. Yes.
Baby comes along?
Yeah, no, it happens in 8.
Is it in 8?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, and it's sort of the first time.
They have two babies in the family portrait studio.
Right.
Jim is, like, grabbing them both and, like, looking up with scared eyes at the lights. Yeah.
That's right. And it's the first time, I guess, outside of Hannah's baby and Astrid, or Asturd, that someone in the office, you know, is like bringing a baby in, and we sort of see how all the different characters interact with that. Something that sort of happens throughout the show is Jim and Pam trying to conceal something from the rest of the office, or just like, we're not ready to tell them just yet. And then inevitably Michael or someone leaks it, and they're like, that's why we didn't want to tell them. And it happens when they're dating. It happens when they're ready to get married. It happens when they have the baby or when they're pregnant. So it's like, they always are very cautious with these people, but that's because they know them so well. And they know exactly how everyone's going to respond. And Pam has this intelligence that allows her to navigate through the office unlike anyone else, I think, in the show.
I think, too, you know, to move into season 8, right, and we're getting close to the end of the show and the end of Pam's journey, but or her arc. But I think one really, like, we talk about season 8 as kind of this weird outlier, but that doesn't really feel as consistent with the rest of the show. Obviously, Robert California is there. They go to Florida, right? No Michael. There are all these contributing factors. And I think another really big factor that kind of throws that season off center with the rest of the show is the fact that Pam is pregnant, one, but also really kind of sidelined from a lot of main character arcs. Like, she, you know, there's the bigger storyline is the fact that there's a replacement for Pam, and she's trying to get with Jim, Kathy,
right?
And that Pam is, you know, she can't think straight, and she's, like, not able to do a lot of things. And Robert, you know, eventually she becomes kind of a support character for Nellie at the end of the season, but she's not the same sort of she's not in the thick of it the way that she is in so many other seasons. She's such a tertiary character in the season 8. And granted, I'm assuming this because she was pregnant in real life.
She was. Yeah. So she took a maternity leave.
Right. Right. So she
did you say she was in every episode? Is that?
I think so.
Yeah, she...
Isn't there a couple she's not in?
Or maybe
it's just we hear her on the phone.
When they're on their honeymoon, she's not on the show.
There is
she's
one episode when they're on the honeymoon and she is in it because during the mafia episode, they call and they talk to Kevin.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, so in season 8, Pam is pregnant. That's like a big storyline and she's just not the same, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's such a super interesting dynamic for the show because in season 9, Pam is very much back. They have both their kids, right? And obviously the dynamic is Jim and Pam's sort of relationship, marital issues where they can't really decide on whether or not Jim should do athlete and go to Philly. And like it's played for a lot of tension.
Right.
But at the end, you know, it does wrap up with them being together, right? It does wrap up with Jim deciding to relinquish his stake in athlete and go to, you know, back to Scranton, right? And I think there's an interesting dynamic that we'll probably talk about later, where it seems like Pam doesn't support Jim in his dream, where he kind of supported her through him. Through hers,
right?
You know, but anyway, season 9 kind of wraps up, and I'm again painting very broad strokes here with the finale where they're together, and Pam is told Jim that they're going to join athlete, they're going to move to Austin, and it kind of ends with the voiceover of Pam saying, "You know, I can't watch the documentary because I wanted to scream at Pam. You know, Jim, it took me 4 years to get to Jim, and he was 10 feet from me. Right? I feel like I've wasted all this time not being as happy as I could have been. You know. And then at the end, she talks about like there's beauty in ordinary things. Like, isn't that kind of the point? Right? That wraps up the entire show. Like, Pam is the character that gets to put a bow on the show.
Yeah.
Because of you know everything that she's been through and everything that she's done to kind of find this new existence. So I think her character journey is very fulfilling. A lot of different stops, a lot of different arcs, a lot of different turns. But if we're just going to wrap up what Pam's arc is like, that's how it ends. You know?
Yeah.
And I think you brought up something important I think we should talk about next, which is sort of like how people's perception of Pam has aged since the show.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about like Pam's public perception. We, of course...
The Triple P.
Yeah, we of course...
By the way, Edwin, that was a very well done, that wrapping up the arc. That was nice.
Thanks, man. I was talking a lot. And
All right. No, you're getting through it. You're getting through it.
I was like, I got to figure out how to land the plane. You got to land the plane.
Yeah, we get hung up a lot, we wanted to get to the end so that we could go. A real Sully performance.
Sometimes I start one of these sentences, and I don't even know where it's going to end. I just hope I find it along the way. I call it... Improvisation.
Always. No, never.
For any reason. You have to play to win, but you also have to win to play.
Adapt, react, readapt, act. Pam's public perception. We, of course, are all members of, we here at this table are all members of several office fan groups, subreddits, Facebook groups,
Knights of the Night.
Instagram meme accounts,
book junior, clubs. Junior deputies.
I have noticed, as Boy have Scouts you guys, that
Scott's tots.
There's some Pam hate out there.
There's a lot of Pam hate.
Lots
out there.
Of it.
And so let's address that. Why do people hate Pam? I think it's mostly because of what how things go in season 9. Right.
There are many. And if you list them out, I think it kind of goes like this in order, right? So you have the fact that she cheats on Roy and leads Jim on, you know.
Yep.
The fact that she's not really given up on Jim, or she's still, you know, connected to Jim even when Jim is with Karen, right? She lies to get the office administrator role, you know. She harasses Danny Cordray about why he wouldn't go out with her.
Right.
Somebody's brought that one up. Brian, the cameraman in season 9, which I guess we totally missed. Like this sort of weird pseudo romance, right?
My least favorite storyline,
And then just in fact that she didn't support Jim's dream when Jim supported her.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess do any of these stand out to you, or do you find validity in these reasons?
What I was thinking about and trying to understand, you know, people can say why they hate Pam because she did this, because she did that, but it's like, well, you know. Meredith does terrible things. Angela does terrible things. Why do we hate Pam for making the wrong choices?
I think it's for the same reason people like hate politicians is because they, as time goes on, it's like they sort of have to have a sort of, well, used to maybe have to have some sort of a moral stance. and be this, like, I am a good person. That's what they're putting out there. And once you do that, all people are going to do is be like, yeah, are they? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that Pam is actually a genuine character who actually cares about people, the more time goes on, I think cynicism does start to take over and it becomes like, she's actually not that great.
Right.
And as opposed to all these other characters, we never expect Angela to be a great person. You know, we never expect Kevin to be a mature person.
Yeah.
But if Pam is asking us to expect her to be this, you know, this the main character of the show, then yeah, people are going to come for you. I think it's like this people's nature.
I have found myself guilty of Pam hate as well.
How dare
even
you?
Even though when I first started watching this show, my celebrity crush was Jenna Fischer. And I loved Pam in the show.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, that's
folks, you heard her here first.
That is when she's at her weakest in the early seasons of the show. So I had to do some self-reflection on this. And
I went out into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights.
We went to the mountain, recorded 4 episodes.
I went on a vision quest and met the lone iguana on top of the pyramid.
We once did like a test episode that we never released, trying to discuss who we thought the main character of the show was.
Yeah, this is one of our first early...
Of course, you know, we can all agree it's an ensemble show. It's about everybody. But if you had to pick somebody to be the hero of the story, I think it's Pam.
Yeah, I do too. I think that's what we discussed in that test recording. That's what came out as we kind of threw these main characters and bounced them off each other.
Right.
Like who's kind of left standing as the one whose journey you care about? And the answer is Pam.
Whose struggle is greatest? Mm-hmm. You know, who overcomes the most?
What kind of bear is best?
Yeah. You know, I mean, of course, Michael disappears and, you know, after season 7 and everything works out fine for him. Jim is sort of okay from the moment we meet him to the very end of the show. Right. I mean, how many terrible things does Jim go through?
Right? Yeah. We don't really see Jim in a ton of turmoil ever.
Pam is in a bad relationship. She has to break it off. She has to tell all her family and everything that she's, you know, breaking off a wedding. She has to live. She has to watch Jim fall in love with someone else. Even though she wanted to break off her engagement to be with him, she fails art school. Her parents get divorced. Michael starts sleeping with her mother.
She learns way too much about Andy Scrotum.
She's seen Michael Scrotum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Her second pregnancy is harder than her first. And meanwhile, some hot new lady moves into the office. And now she and her fiance are down in Florida. Her husband are down in Florida while she is alone in Scranton caring for their 2 children. I mean, you know, she is constantly overcoming barriers, and we do see her struggle and make the wrong decisions. And I think that the reason that people hate her, which they will not admit to themselves, is because they see themselves in her, right? Mm-hmm. You want yourself to make the right decision, right? So when you see Pam do something that you don't agree with, that's very hard to watch.
Hmm. It's a great point. It's a really good point.
So there you go.
I think 2 things. And I've come up with this more when I was thinking more about Jim, because Jim is the other character that receives a lot of hate in hindsight, right? A lot of HIH.
Sure. So we'll address that
when we talk about Jim eventually. But I think the idea is that we have no expectations for Angela or Creed or Kevin or Meredith, and we have tons of expectations for Jim. We expect Jim to do the right thing, to be a better guy, to do all these things, and he often does it, right? And especially later in the show, that's played for laughs, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we have these expectations of Pam as well, that she's going to be similarly, like, I guess, altruistic or something, that she's always going to do the right things, right? And we, again, it's like you have to be, if you're going to hold one character to a standard, like you got to hold the other characters to a standard. And likewise, if you're not going to hold any of the characters in this comedy show to a standard, like you don't necessarily have to hold Pam up to that as well. Mm-hmm. I think the other piece of it is that if you look at all these decisions that people don't like about Pam, they're the same things that we called out as character development moments, you know, just minutes ago, right?
Right.
And it's her acting in her own self-interest, right? Mm-hmm. So if you don't like these, if you're going to like portray these actions as negative or reasons to not like Pam, it's because she's being selfish, right? cheated on Jim, led Jim on, right? You know, doesn't support Jim's dream or whatever, right? Or she lies to get the office administrator role, right? Like a lot of those things that you would see them as being selfish, right? But if you were talking about Pam trying to find her way and giving her maybe that grace or that doubt that she isn't going to do the right thing all the time. Mm-hmm. But we do kind of, her character development is about asserting herself or trying to find herself or trying to out kind of grow up out of the concrete, right? If you want to use that metaphor of like a rose through the concrete, right? Mm-hmm. She has to kind of fight through these things and kind of assert herself, right? Like, yeah, she has to like stand up for herself and break off the relationship she doesn't want to be in. Right. She has to stand up, to kind of tell Jim that she doesn't want to go along with whatever he's doing, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like that's what it is. It's a flip side of either coin, two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
By season nine, Pam's been through so much. Mm-hmm. And she's like, here we are. I made all the right decisions. I broke off this relationship that I was definitely just going to go along with, turned my life upside down, took all these risks, accomplished so much. Now here we are. We're comfortable. We did it. Like, why does Jim want more?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, I can understand that. I mean, she never exactly puts it that way.
Mm-hmm.
No. It doesn't help that we can clearly see that Brian, the sound guy, is into her. But she needs a friend in that moment. Does, Michael Scott's gone.
She does have a moment where I love that Michael Scott would be the go-to friend. I love. There's a moment where
He would.
There's a moment where she's talking to Nelly, I think it is, and she says he bought our house without telling me. Like he started this job without telling me. Like
Why is Jim so great?
Right. This idea that like Jim is making these big decisions without her, that she doesn't feel looped into the conversation for these big family decisions. That's very fair. I think that's part of it. And then Nelly says, don't worry, we'll find you a new man who's rich, cut to, and Filipino is what she says. But anyway, that's part of it, right? Is that that Pam doesn't feel included in this kind of decision making.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, which I'm sure echoes some feelings she's had, over the course of the whole show. Mm-hmm. And at a base level, she is a main character of the show. Therefore, she's going to have a lot more screen time. The documentary crew is filming her a lot more than other people. And you're just going to get a lot more moments of her good and bad, whatever. Like, you just get a lot more of that. And so as time goes on and people start picking Pam apart, it's like, well, yeah, if you had a documentary crew follow you for 9 years, I'm sure people would tear you to bits. Like, that's just how it would go.
As Kevin says, if you record someone long enough, they're bound to do something stupid. It's only human natural.
Right. And I think it's outweighed. I think all the stuff you can detract from Pam is outweighed by the moments and the kindness that she does show. Like, her relationship with Dwight is really sweet.
We don't have to go on and on and on, but I did want to go back to an episode some stuff that we kind of skipped over at the end of season three, that episode that we talked about where there's that moment that ends with Jim asking her out to dinner, and that's a really sweet moment. Well, that whole episode is Jim going off to New York, interviewing for a new job with Karen, Michael thinking that he got this new job. Both of those people are gone. The people that she's kind of becoming closer to in the office. And, she kind of takes this on as an opportunity to see where this is going. She sort of like befriends Dwight, decides that she's going to be the secret assistant to the assistant to the regional manager.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, there's, the dead bird and things like that. She tries to make the most of her situation. And I think that that's something that makes that moment right before Jim comes in especially heartbreaking, that we're just watching. She's, she's still trying to make the most of it.
She's making the best of it.
Yeah. And she does. We watch her do that over and over and over again. And by the time you get to season nine, she's exhausted. Which is probably which is fair.
Totally. So, and besides Michael, who has a cathartic moment every episode, like she by far has the most, we see her have the most cathartic moments, I feel like, out of anyone in the show. Beach Games comes to mind. I mean, the proposal, I mean, their entire wedding, all of this, we see Pam experiencing all of these, highs and lows in a way that we don't see any other character, except Michael. Because Michael's obviously going to is the biggest whirlwind.
I think too, the idea that you can go back and you can make, you know, you can, it's almost like reading a text or a book in English class, right? You can go back and read these characters and these decisions however you want, right? Mm-hmm. And I think if you do go back and you read Pam's decisions as selfish instead of self, you know, asserting herself or acting in her own self-interest, right? It's a, you know, maybe can be a fine line. I think a lot of that comes from the fact that you're looking back at the whole show in hindsight. That you're looking at the beginning point and the end point, and you're looking at all the points in between, right? Mm-hmm. I think when you're watching the show for the first time, or maybe you're like, you're watching Pam, because in theory, right, this character only goes through this life once, right? Like, I think as you watch it, you don't feel that way. But when you go back and you can see with the benefit of hindsight, with the benefit of completion, mm-hmm. with the benefit of having every episode and every moment to reference, you can maybe read those decisions as more selfish. So I think that's kind of where that reading comes in.
I think the microwave gets a lot of play.
Oh, yeah.
I always hear that as a reason people don't like Pam. It's just this one thing of the whole microwave incident. And it's like, if you're a really, really, really... like good roommate or something, and you have a bunch of bad roommates, it's like the first time you do something bad, it's a huge deal. And everyone's like, whoa. It's like, no. Like you try keeping a kitchen with all of the people in the office. Like, I'm sure that would get extremely annoying. And it's like, so a lot of the moments I feel like people bash on Pam for are like completely understandable.
Right.
Like, of course you're like the mom in this office. Like it would be really hard.
Last night there was a car on our street that the alarm was going off over and over again at midnight.
Oof.
And I seriously considered writing a note that said, fuck you. Your car alarm was going off all night, and going downstairs and putting it on the windshield. What would that have accomplished? I'd be the asshole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That person didn't know their car alarm was going off all night.
Sincerely disappointed. Yeah. All right, Richie.
Yeah.
Just because someone
likes
holier
than thou.
Just because someone likes things clean doesn't mean they're rich. Yeah, they're rich. How would wiping it with a paper towel make things worse?
I would find a way, Pam. Mm-hmm.
Pam Beasley.
Pamela Morgan Beasley.
I think that wraps up everything we had on Pam. This was a very long, sprawling episode. I think.
Can we do a quick hit, like favorite Pam moments? What do you think?
That's a good question. Favorite Pam moments.
I'll start out.
Yeah.
But just for one of the funniest moments she has is when she makes fun of D'Angelo's juggling.
Oh yeah.
In the break room. I just love that moment. And she's like
juggles. No hands.
And then when she's doing the whole bit when Creed is the manager and she's like pretending to be all the clients.
Oh yeah. That 100%. That
I think
is
that's
such
like
an amazing
one of the better. Like, just, Pam is so funny, and you don't get to see her
I just
kind of
love paper and all things paper.
You don't get to see her be that silly that often.
This sounds like a marriage really nice. To me. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kismet.
great Pam moment. And of course, my only other one would be her speech in Beach Games. Is like, it's right in the midpoint of the whole show. It's just like, it has so much weight. It's just, it's awesome.
Her speech in Chili's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I feel God in this Chili's tonight.
I love the moment in the injury when she realizes that Dwight is kind of her friend.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Dwight's kind of my friend.
Yeah.
And then, like, that is the way that their relationship plays out through the rest of the show.
Yeah.
She's like, and then at the end, I don't even remember when this happens. Dwight is either going to do his karate kicks, or he's going to do the family portrait studio, or there's something where like harm might befall Pam. And she's like, Dwight, you and I have always been very close. Remember your concussion? Yeah. And she says, yes. He says, yes, I remember. But you also married my greatest enemy. Mm-hmm.
In Pam's replacement, mm-hmm. rewatching it, which by the way, I think might be one of the best Dwight episodes in the entire show. It's season 8.
Yes. I know this
that,
one. Yeah.
Every single line, Rainn Wilson, every moment Dwight has in the episode is just incredible. Mm-hmm. But the whole moment where Pam is like, everyone's being nice to me because I'm pregnant. And she's like, Dwight, am I pretty? And like the conversation that they have of Dwight just being like, well, most males are just trying to impregnate females, which is the drawing factor in attraction. So you're at an all time low. Like they have this whole conversation, and the way she accepts it, she's like hmm. And she goes with it, and then she makes the joke in the break room of like, oh, you guys like someone having hot where Pam used to sit? And they're like, yeah. No. And she's like, I'm kidding. I get it. Like, even I want some fries with that shake. Or, you know, she said that gym later. Yeah. But that I think that whole episode is a really, really, like, we see Pam comfortable with who she is, even though she's like, still has some nagging feelings. It's fantastic.
That quote that you played at the top of the show where she's like, and then you said, Pam, 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 Pam. And then you sneezed in my tea and you said, don't worry, it's just allergies. Remember that? I love that line. I also love when Dwight becomes acting manager and people aren't listening to his lecture. And she's just like, hey, guys, come on, let's listen to Dwight's lecture.
I love when Michael comes up and she says, knock, knock. He's with Dwight and he says, knock, knock. And Pam says, who? And he goes, Buddha. She goes, Buddha who? And he puts this butter, this stick of butter on her desk. And he goes, Buddha this bread for me, will you? And he's like, now I've got butter. And he's like, I need something for my hands. And Pam goes, and there's butter on my desk. There's butter on my desk.
I love some of her responses to Michael. They're just so good.
I'll give you a quick. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, my mind is going a mile a minute, mile an hour, that fast.
The one where they bring. Okay, so it's at the end of the Michael Scott Paper Company arc, where Michael comes in and fake fires Pam, hires Pam, right?
Uh-huh. Right.
And then he says, Ryan did not take it so well when I gave him the job and took it away.
Yeah.
And then he says, hey, what's the new receptionist's name? And she goes, Aaron. She knows exactly what Michael's going to do to Aaron. Yeah.
When she's setting up the new copier and Kevin's like, you said it would be suit. And he's like, suit could be now or like 3 weeks. And he's like, today. Does that mean, does 3 weeks mean soon for you, Kevin? Sometimes. Well, then it'll be done soon.
Pamela Morgan Beasley. We love ya.
What a keeper.
It is time for a conference room.
All right, you know what? That's it. Conference room, 5 minutes.
Okay, so for this week's conference room segment, especially talking about Pam, I thought of this video. It happens on ESPN's morning show called Get Up. It's from a few years ago, but last year, I guess. Rainn Wilson went on that show to promote The Meg, which he's in that movie about the big shark. Which
Seeing, by the way.
Yeah. Mm. And he's a noted Seahawks fan, Rainn Wilson. So they're there talking about the movie. They're talking about sports. And Ryan Russillo, who is a podcast host, ESPN kind of personality, eventually stops and he's like, now that you're here, I have to talk about The Office. And he brings up all these things about Pam that he doesn't like. And he goes through the laundry list of all the things that he talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
And Rainn Wilson is kind of like,
And the reason this is kind of interesting is that's like live on ESPN.
Yes.
Like, this is not...
They're there to talk about sports.
Yes, this is like...
And Ryan Russillo had tweeted this before. Like, he's talked about this before. He loves The Office, but he's seen the show and come to this conclusion. Mm-hmm. And so... He does confront Rainn Wilson about this, and Rainn Wilson's like, so how about those Seahawks, right? Mm-hmm. So he kind of flips it around and makes it back to a
He's
funny
got a
thing.
Lot of like lifelong bachelor takes on Pam. But. Mm-hmm.
So my question for you is, if you could talk to any actor from The Office about their character, Whoa. Who would it be?
Ooh.
Or about another character, let's say. So let's say if you wanted to talk to Val about Daryl, you could.
Really quick, just you mentioned Val. Because I watched the vandalism episode. Mm-hmm. Dude, Pam's mural gets vandalized. And like, she's like, can anyone see this? This is crazy. And Val just like closes the door to her office. It's like, yo, someone like care that someone deface this mural that's in your place you work. Anyway, sorry.
Another reason why I love Brian, the sound guy, came to her defense.
To answer your question.
Yeah, I want to talk about Brian, the sound guy.
I'd like to talk to BJ Novak. I mean, for a lot of things, because he was writing so much.
The actor plays Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd want to know what he kind of initially what he thought Ryan would be and who Ryan became.
Hmm.
And if there was any... character developments that he regretted over the course of the show, or just like wished he would have done differently. I guess him and Mindy, but I'm curious more about Ryan's character, like what they planned with it, because it felt a little lost the last few seasons.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
I would like to talk to John Krasinski about Jim and the things that happened with Jim in the later seasons. And I think one thing that comes out if you watch the early commentaries, they talk about how John Krasinski is actually like a really funny actor, but we never get to give him anything funny to do because mm-hmm. he's a straight man, right? Mm-hmm. And over the and like as the show evolves, he actually gets a ton of comedic stuff to do. He gets to be really silly. He gets to make mistakes. He gets
right,
to look
right.
bad.
Dwight's right. Christmas. Dwight, you know,
he
yeah.
has to play Chuck.
Yeah,
right, I begged right. you to play Chuck.
Right. Yeah, yeah. yeah.
I can't play Chuck. Look at me, Jim. This is Dwight. He's, look at me, Jim. This is not the face of Chuck. This is the scary face that appears before you die.
It just reminded me of another quote. From, I don't see what's so bad. He's got the broad face of a brewer.
She's one of the plain, hearty women of Scranton.
I'd love to talk to Ed Helms about what
yeah.
the hell happened with Andy.
How he felt about that.
Yeah. Well, did he? That's does he good feel one. Good about that?
I'm sure he does.
Feels good about all yeah. the money he made.
You think Andy? You think Ed Helms is like deeply conflicted over what happened over the last like five seasons of The mm-hmm. Office? I don't yeah. know if he does.
I'd love to talk to Angela about like how she's perceived in public mm-hmm. versus who she is, because she doesn't seem like Angela at all from
no.
what I've seen and like
no, not at all
interactions. Like quite the opposite. So I kind of like Angela's take on some other characters and where, you know, she feels like she fits on the show. I think she'd have some interesting perspectives because she's not, she's as close a thing the show, The Office has to a villain.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And so I kind of like to pick her brain on that.
I know, sorry, I'm going back. I know that Ed Helms probably isn't like, I just feel like he had to go back and adjust that character a few different times. So I'd like to ask more specifically about that, you know, like, mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you know, there are actors who like journal in character and things like that so that they can, you know, so that they know what their motivation is for every scene and how to behave. And his behavior changes several times. So I just kind of wonder mm-hmm. if maybe it's just how he was feeling that year or
I think your strategy of being more specific would work a lot better than your what the hell happened plan. That you initially
yeah,
let off.
There happened, you go. Yeah, I'd prepare a few questions, okay?
I think the other one is Steve Carell, and I'm curious as to how Steve Carell... So, obviously, Steve Carell plays this really outlandish comedic character for seven seasons on TV, and then you see... I mean, of course, with some exception, like, as he becomes a movie star, right, mm-hmm. it seems like Steve Carell does less and less comedic roles. He takes these very dramatic turns.
Yeah.
Even if they're funny...
Foxcatcher.
Yeah, or even if they're funny or they're, Marlon. Like, they're... It's a dramatic movie, but he still has funny lines and things like that. So
heartfelt movies.
I'm
very heartfelt.
Curious to see how he sees his legacy as an actor and how that, you know, having done that for so long, influenced with the decisions he made later in his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good though.
Good one.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah. Oh, please. Oh, that would be great, guys. Please let us know what you think.
Questions you'd ask actors. And-
mm-hmm. Facebook, Twitter, yep. Instagram. Call us 503-694-9314.
Let us know what questions you would ask us if you could ask us anything.
Yes.
Yeah,
we'll answer them.
Yeah.
Before, do you want to wrap up with trivia?
We have to wrap up with trivia. I know I just did the...
Absolutely, I do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Alrighty.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
And what would this episode be without some Pam trivia?
Ooh.
Obviously, we're just focusing on Pam. I jumped through some episodes, found some questions. And let's see how this goes. This is in no particular order. We're going to jump around. Starting in season 9, what exactly is vandalized on Pam's mural?
What part?
Like
she draw?
No. What is the vandalism?
Oh, it's butts.
It's butts and.
Oh, it's
there's
like
two butts.
It's like words. It's like this.
And then two words.
It's like this sucks or like
yeah,
something.
Yep.
That's what it says?
Two butts and this sucks.
That's so funny.
It's just like, so childish.
Two butts. Okay. In Pam's replacement, Dwight and Pam are working together to figure out if Jim is attracted to Kathy, and right. Dwight sets three rules for him and Pam while working on this operation. What are those three rules?
I don't know. Whoa. It's like you might not like what I find or something like
yeah.
that or like...
Loyalty to the truth.
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
We stop at nothing and don't fall in love. Which Pam agrees to.
That's if you're hired,
yes.
if you haven't fallen in love with me first.
Yes.
What?
What is the name of the prospective intern that Pam talks to at the job fair?
Oh, Justin Paulsnack.
Yes.
Wow.
Very good.
This
Very
just in.
Good.
Yeah.
Justin Paulsner.
Yeah. He wrote his name on the paper. Pam.
This was a canvas to people to draw.
You could be a janitor with dignity or a friendly cashier.
The way Steve Carell is like, excuse me, and he's like, we want the best. And then he turns and addresses him and goes, hi. So funny. All right. So we see Pam. She owns two cars through the course of the show.
Mm.
One of them, she co-owns with Jim, and we start in season six.
It is like a red Prius thing.
No, it's a 2010 Subaru Outback. Okay. Is what her and Jim have. Mm-hmm. But after she breaks up with Roy, she buys this car. What car does she drive?
Oh, man. I remember her talking about buying a car. It's a Honda or something, or like a...
No, you were close. It's a blue Toyota Yaris.
Okay.
Blue.
Dark blue, gray, dark blue, gray. You see her driving it a couple
deep,
times.
Deep, deep cut.
Yeah.
I'm only going deep for you guys.
I gotta pay attention. I gotta know what everyone's cars are.
This is gonna be hard.
I don't know what people's cars are.
The point of this trivia is not to get them right. Yeah. It's to learn weird facts.
Mm.
Their daughter's middle name, Cece's middle name is?
Marie.
Marie.
What's your daughter's name? Peepee? Peepa. Yes.
By the way, Jenna Fisher was granted naming rights by the show producers, who chose to name her after her own niece. There you go.
Peepa?
What episode, after Pam's maternity leave in the show, what episode do we see her actually returning into the office
Returning into the office with Philip.
Yes.
Jury Duty. Nine.
Yes, it's Jury Duty. Very good. Yeah. That is the episode.
I was thinking of Happy Hour when she comes out.
I was
going
to say the Dave and Buster's episode.
Sid and Dexter's.
But she doesn't come back with the kid.
Mm-hmm.
How old were Pam and Roy engaged for when we start the show?
How long were they engaged
for? How long were they engaged for?
7 years? 6 years? Something like that?
No, sorry. When we first meet Roy and Pam, how long have they been engaged for?
2 years? I don't know.
Three
years.
Yes. That was
three
a guess.
3 years and running. Yes. You already said Pam's middle name, which is?
Morgan.
Morgan. Mm-hmm. Do you know her birthday? Yeah. March 25th, 1979. Pam is one of at least four Sabre Dunder Mifflin employees who leaks the story about the printer fires.
How
does Pam... What's her leak? How does she do it?
She's talking to someone at daycare who's like got some interesting story, and she's got to come up with an interesting story.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
She says, you know, our printer's catching on fire. It turns out she's a reporter.
Yeah.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Inadvertently tells the wife of a reporter at the local newspaper. Very good. Let's see. Oh, last one here.
That is a Pam moment that I love. Yeah. The way that she's telling that story to Chip.
All right, last one. Over the course of the show, we generally hear or get to know the names of most of Pam's family.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Name as much of Pam's family. I have a list of 1,
Helene.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Wow.
I have 8 people, potentially 9 in her family.
Jeez. Mm. Okay.
So let's see if we can get them.
Helene.
Correct.
Cecilia, her grandmother.
No, not Cecilia.
Sylvia.
Sylvia. Very
Sylvia.
Nice. Yes.
And if it's a boy, Silvio.
Yeah.
Yep.
Philip, her grandfather.
Correct.
Do we count the sons?
Yeah.
The kid. Do we count the children
Philip
as well?
Philip and Cece,
Philip
there's 5.
Philip and Cece, there's 5. Penny, her sister.
Yes.
There's another sister.
She doesn't have 2 sisters, does she?
No. The other one is a cousin and her father.
Ah, frick.
Ah, what's her father's name? Jim?
Michael?
It's William Beasley. William Beasley.
Frick.
And her cousin.
Christy Kelly.
No.
Isabel.
No.
No. Oh, Jocelyn Webster.
Webster. Very nice. And you're missing the knife. One more.
She's really into mountain biking. Us? Not so much lately.
It's her husband.
Jim.
Huh? Jim.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry.
James Gunn.
That's it. That's all I got.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Alex, for that wonderful trivia, and thank you, listeners, for listening. And
sticking with us through this marathon.
But, you guys...
It's a binge.
Fun run.
You don't always have to listen. You can talk to us.
Oh.
You can reach us.
You can tweet us.
Through social media. Facebook, Twitter, at Michael Scott Pod.
Instagram,
at Michael Scott Podcast Company. And we have a phone number that you can call. That number is 503-694-9314. Call and leave us a message. We play them on the show. Questions, comments, funny stories. We want to hear it.
Stump us. Get a question. Stump all of us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much again.
Thank you.
Please tune in next week. Until next time.
Pippity poppy, give me the salad.
Yes, sir.
Come on. In the middle of the night, my mother says, when you gonna live your life? Oh, mother dear, we're not the fortunate ones. And girls, they wanna have fun.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.